Greg Farrell is the president and CEO of Farrell Wealth and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Well, good morning. The show's Money Matters with Greg on WVLP 103.1 FM here in Valparaiso, Indiana, community radio station. And the show's about money. We talk money on this show. We talk about financial literacy, and we talk about things that actually might help you save some money because your money does matter. So I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and president of Farrell Wealth. It's a local financial advising firm, wealth management firm here in Valparaiso, Indiana, but we also serve a number of clients throughout the nation. Thanks to Greg Kovach, who just walked behind me here for his engineer, for being here today. The show wouldn't be able to run without him, so we really appreciate him being here. And thanks to WVLP, obviously, as a community radio station. You know, it's a 501c3 here, and so it is a charity and does have the ability to be able to accept tax-deductible donations as well as advertisements. So if you're ever looking to get some good advertisement for some reasonable amount of dollars and use those advertising dollars out there as a business owner, highly recommend you look at WVLP. You can certainly find call the station here at 219-476-9000, and they'd be happy to help you. So we're talking the market here today. We have a number of different outlets that were out there, a little bit of house cleaning, like we always like to be able to mention to everyone. Initially is to let you know we are on iTunes. You can find us on iTunes, find all the previous past shows on iTunes. We have some great shows, so some fantastic guests. You can pick the topic. We try to list it out as much as possible, so by topic, so you can get right to it. And if there's something that doesn't necessarily interest you, you can just pass and move forward. But we really appreciate all your efforts on iTunes, and thank you so much for the ability to be able to do that, and for all your support out there. We have well over 70 some episodes in the past, and always getting up the new ones. We'll put this one up as soon as we can get through, put it through compliance, and get it done. So you can find us on iTunes. You can also tweet us and reach out on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at Farrell Wealth. It's F-A-R-R-A-L-L Wealth. And you can certainly reach us there as well as Facebook, and reach out at Farrell Wealth as well. So that's been a nice place to ask questions, sort of jump in here on the radio show, because it is a smaller radio station with the bandwidth that we have and the scope we have and the range we have. But really, it's been through social media and through podcasts that you've been able to listen in. And hopefully gain some knowledge. That's our whole point, is trying to add some value to you and your lives, and help you with what's going on out there in the markets. First of all, we always like to talk about the markets. Today, we're going to talk about the markets, then flip into is Europe cheap? Or is Europe basically a place to start looking for investing? So we're going to go over our European offerings that are out there. We have a fantastic report on what is going on in Europe, and want to run through Europe to see if there are opportunities as to where you go, how you might want to invest in some European issues. And then we're going to run into a number of different things you should be asking a financial advisor, some of the questions that you should be asking a financial advisor. Talking about some taxes as well, and we're getting into tax time. Here we go into April 15th. As far as most are filing April 15th, you don't necessarily have to. You can always go on extension and give yourself an extra 6 months. But for the most part, everybody's filing April 15th and getting it done. And as you talk with your professionals and your team, just highly recommend you make sure you're asking lots of questions. So we're going to review a little bit of tax. And then also, just to end up, hopefully get to a report, I want to talk about tips to stay financially fit. Certainly, I'm on a mission to try to lose a bunch of weight this year, getting ready for a reunion I have coming up here in May of next year. I am determined, and I have challenged a number of people in my life to do the same. And it's all about health and trying to figure out financially fit in this situation. You know, not only are you physically fit, but you want to be financially fit. So that's my MO. I figure if I say it out loud on the air, that somebody might actually listen and hold me accountable. So they're looking for accountability, trying to do the best they can possibly do in regards to not only being financially fit, but also physically fit. With it, that said, here we go, talking about the markets. You know, last week was an up week. We're up 0.6% overall into Friday. Now, we kind of do a little post-mortem on the week overall on this show, mainly because most of the reports that have come out give a nice week update, and then we talk about the week coming up. Always make sure you know what's going on. This week will be a lot of Fed talk. Janet Yellen and the Fed are meeting this week, and there'll be a lot of conversation about that. But, you know, markets really paused ahead of this this Yellen talk. You know, the S&P 500 was trading lower in the morning on Friday, ended up being considerably lower. But everybody's waiting for Janet Yellen, Fed Chair Fisher. They really could kind of signal the direction of the mid-March FOMC meeting that we've been talking about in the show a lot. There will be a mid-March FOMC meeting. The probability of rates being raised went from 31% on the show last Monday, then had jumped that day to 55%. And now, after this week, with a number of different Fed chairs coming out and talking about what they think, that rate hike is now up to 80%. So it has definitely increased. And the probability is much higher. So you want to be watching that. You want to be following today's action. Really, there's a pullback on Thursday in which the S&P shed 0.6 and 9 of 11 sectors as they all lost ground. Financials are down 1.5%, which was pretty weak because they've been very, very strong throughout the year. Although it's really the best performing over the last month, financials did get hit. Utilities were up 0.7, telecom was up 0.1. Overseas Asian markets, the Shanghai Composite was down 0.4. Hang Seng was down 0.7. And they all followed U.S. lower. Really, you're looking at the strength that comes from France and Italy. But crude oil has also dropped. There was a huge drop at 2.3% last week. Gold at 1228 has been dropping. And the yield on the 10-year note is at 2.49, really after the large increase from last week. It was trading 2.32 or so. So that's the indication that the markets are pricing in a raise, a 25-basis-point raise. So where do we go from here? Look, many of the things is to speak about, the S&P 500 is up 0.6 for the week last week, which was the first six-week win streak since 2015. And in fact, this could be really the 14th six-week win streak since March 2009 of the S&P lows. If you look at the previous 13 times this has occurred, the S&P 500 was higher on average by 0.8 a month later and positive in 9 of 13 instances. Now, last week we did have the second worst day of the year. The S&P 500 closed down 0.59% on Thursday, which doesn't sound like a lot overall. I mean, if you really start adding it up, it's not as much as it should be. You know, 0.59 is not awful, but it is actually the second worst session of the year. So really, this 0.6 loss on January 30th was worse. And this puts in perspective how persistent the rally has been, as there has really been no downside volatility at all. It's very, very complacent out there. And in fact, today, last Friday, would be a 98th consecutive day without a 1% close lower for the S&P. That's the longest since 105 in 1995. So it has definitely been a very solid upwards-looking movement. And when we talked about our forecast, the stock market outlook for as of March 1st, 2017, we really forecasted this mid-digit single returns for the S&P 500 in 2017. And this will be really consistent with the historical mid to late economic cycle performance as well. Expecting the gains to be driven by really, number one, a pickup in U.S. economic growth. Also, the mid to high single earnings that gains that as corporate America emergence from its year-long earnings recession we've talked a lot about on this show, and an expansion in bank lending. Of course, the stable price-to-earnings ratio, PE, of 18-19 is really good as well. So we're expecting gains will be likely to come from really leading us to maintain this year-end stock market target despite this strong start in 2017, that we just continue as is and keep on plugging. Overall, we're not necessarily seeing chinks in the armor as far as the economy goes. We'll see what happens when the Fed does something this week. It's going to be very, very important that what they do and what they say is going to be of note. Really expecting the 10-year Treasury yield to end 2017 in the same range that it's been sitting in for a while, between 2.25 and 2.75. It has a potential to go to 3 based on the raises. They could raise this March. They're looking at again in May and then again in July. The probability of those two later in the year are lesser, but it still could happen. So really looking at an analysis based on the potential interest rate range and the duration of index indicates this sort of low to the digit single returns for the bond index. So when you're looking at bonds and you're trying to be a conservative investor, it's sort of steady as she goes as well. The rate hike in December sort of shows that the Federal Reserve will gradually start normalizing interest rates, and we expect to see 2 to 3 hikes in 2017 with the one coming here in March. We were definitely pushing for a March. We really thought March was more important to get something out there. I think the Fed is actually behind in their raising rates. They need to get going, and I think that's certainly the market's finally catching up here and pricing this all in, which is really, really important because the market wants certainty, and if it's certain that they're going to raise and there's an 80% chance, then it's certain that it's going to happen. So much better thoughts on the status quo there as far as the bond market. Now, with that being said, we've really been continuing to focus our allocations in the U.S. overall as far as investments. We're going to talk a lot about Europe here in a minute, but you're really looking for opportunities to selectively add emerging markets and selectively add European offerings. There are improved fundamentals and attractive valuations out there, and especially in emerging markets. And we'd like to see some further evidence of the dollar stability before adding to overseas positions, and changing in the global trade policy remains still that key risk. But we're seeing opportunities, and there definitely are things that you want to be thinking about if you're willing to be able to take the risk. So obviously talk about diversified portfolio and making sure that you are not all your eggs in one basket. Wanted to mention that eggs in one basket was, I don't know how many people saw Snapchat out there go public. The IPO was pushed out between a price range between $15 and $17. It opened at $24 and has literally been stratospheric since. The valuation of Snapchat now is almost 4 times that of Facebook, and it seems pretty crazy that it is, but it is sort of reality check. I traded through the dot-com boom and the dot-com bust as a Chicago Board of Options market maker in the pits in Chicago, and traded a number of different companies that are now at zero and have all gone out of business. So I definitely am feeling the euphoria of the Snapchat world, and I hope you are thinking about and doing a really good job of sitting on your hands in regards to Snapchat. I think it's extremely overvalued, and I don't necessarily see how they're going to monetize this. I'd like to wait and to take a wait and see, like you can with a good example in Facebook. So we don't like to talk about individual issues on this show and really try to steer away from each individual stock, but you have to mention what's going on in Snapchat overall, and certainly I cannot even come close to recommending it just based on valuation's sake. It has a lot of headwinds involved, and we'll just sort of have to wait and see. But that's just wanted to be able to bring it up just because it is the topic of last week, without a doubt. And SNAP is the name of the symbol. and cannot be prudent in any sort of recommendation on that. In fact, I'm going to actually devote part of the show next week to many of my findings that have to do with Snapchat. So tune in for that as much as you can. And we'll see. But technology valuations really kind of are reflecting an overly pessimistic expectation. And healthcare remains attractively valued, although really the policy uncertainty still kind of remains high. We're going to try to figure out exactly what that looks like. You look at industrials. Industrials may benefit from increased infrastructure and defense spending. The financials are really poised to benefit from the deregulation and the steeper yield curve. And, you know, finally, regulatory barriers and potentially higher oil prices support master limited partnerships through rising interest rates. Even though rising interest rates are a risk, they definitely have a risk with MLPs. But all of these things you're sort of seeing that we're recommending, and we're definitely following many of these stories to be able to kind of see how they all shape and move forward. It really has to do with policies. So if policies are able to be able to get through some of these things, and you're able to be able to see some a tax package and a healthcare package that comes about, well, then you're going to be in a good spot. But if they are not done, well, then we're going to see certainly a correction and more volatility in the market. So wanting to make sure that you are positioned and have a diversified portfolio and to make sure that you're looking for opportunities overall. Fixed income, you talk about bonds and where we're positioning for that right now. Really recommending below a benchmark fixed income allocation just because with rising interest rates, it's not a matter of whether you're going to lose money in bonds. It's just a matter of how much. You really want to be able to make sure you're in high quality fixed income exposure, and it's really focused on investment grade corporate bonds and back, you know, mortgage backed securities. Really, given their attractive yield, are something to consider in a diversified bond portfolio. So we're maintaining a modest high yield bond exposure due to attractive yields and expected continued economic growth despite full valuations. I mean, we are very well priced here with the markets where we are. It is, in fact, I would have to say we're close to in spots, certainly overpriced. I use a shopping analogy all the time. Basically, right now, if I had forgotten my anniversary, which I certainly don't and do not intend to, but especially with a 20th year coming up here, which is exciting for both my wife and I. It's been nearly 20 years coming in October. But if I were to forget about an anniversary gift and I really needed something quickly, right now, in relation to the stock market, I'm walking into Tiffany's right on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, and I'm asking for the most expensive thing that possible with no discount. I don't want a discount. I don't want to hear about it. I want to pay full price. And in fact, I might even be willing to pay a little bit over price, which is crazy. But that is exactly what's kind of happening in the market in a lot of different places. So that's why we wanted to be able to bring up some of the places you can go in a fully efficiently priced market, which there really are no discounts. It's very difficult to find things that are on the cheap. So one question we had on Twitter that kind of came about was, will the S&P fill its recent gap? You know, the S&P gapped up on Wednesday's opening following President Trump's address to Congress, and really the vast majority of gaps are filled. And we think it's likely really that short-term weakness could fill that gap. And this is more of a technical basis, but to provide an opportunity to add positions perhaps around the 2350 kind of price level in the S&P. And then the last question we had, and I'll move on to our conversation about Europe here, but what is the outlook for growth versus value in 2017? From a fundamental perspective, we believe that the strong characteristics on both sides of our views really are sort of relatively balanced. It's really should see some back and forth between growth and value this year. Growth has led so far in 2017, following the value's really outperformance in 2016. And this is all measured by the Russell 1000 value and Russell 1000 growth indices across the board. So We're looking at a more of a value or a more of a growth side. Obviously, with the election and a number of other things, you're looking at the small caps. You're looking at better valuations and that favor growth. So looking for growth across the board is going to be something we're going to try to find. And that's why we want to talk about Europe. So before I get there, just a little bit of house cleaning. I want to thank everybody that's joining us here online. And obviously through Facebook and a number of other places. We're on Twitter as well. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm that's local here to Valparaiso, Indiana, but also serves a number of clients throughout the nation. We love to talk the market, and we love to talk financial literacy as well, and that's what we're doing today. We're going to talk the market, talk a little bit about Europe, kind of follow up with that, and then go into really 10 questions you want to ask your financial advisor. That's coming up, and then really talk about taxes and try to do a little bit of taxation without making it complicated and try to give you some ideas that will help you as you go and talk to your accountant or do your own taxes. Here we go. It's April 15th coming up here pretty soon, so I wanted to be able to talk a little bit about taxes overall. So let's talk about Europe. Really, it's trying to find European offerings. How do the fundamentals look? I mean, really, Europe has been extremely beaten up, and it's starting to continue to strengthen. So want to be able to talk about both earnings and valuations and how things are improving, and then also look at the technical side of Europe and see how that might be an opportunity, and then look at the political concerns, which often get expressed through currency markets and likely determine whether European equities begin to kind of outperform the domestic peers. But with the U.S. being so valued where it is right now, it's very difficult to find value, and that's why I wanted to be able to turn our heads towards the case of increasing European investments. It's getting stronger, and as we evaluate the fundamentals, the valuations, and to a lesser extent the technicals, really, throughout most of the region, we're seeing improvement in the economic data. Sorry, and most importantly, in corporate earnings. After a strong fourth quarter of 2016, based on the MSCI Europe earnings up 28%, earnings growth may be positive for the first time since 2013, although just barely. But on a year-to-year basis, that's encouraging. So, more importantly, earnings expectations for 2017 have been improving, and valuations for European stocks are relatively attractive based on the forward-looking earnings estimates. So although they may still seem expensive based on trailing earnings, forward-looking earnings have been pretty dismal. So as we look forward to see what's going on, how are we doing, what are we doing, and let's make a case for Europe. The technical picture, if you look at the technicals, the last components in our investment process really have been kind of mixed. So it's kind of difficult to look at the technicals right now. But European equities appear to be close to kind of breaking out. And relative to U.S. stocks, European equities have really stalled, at least sort of temporarily. Much of the relative performance between U.S. and European equities will likely depend on currency markets, which in turn are likely to be driven by political actions in all the regions. So let's talk about where to go in Europe and where we might look at some of the things that we can see. Now, in many parts of the country here, we've not had much of a winter, and we're already several weeks away into spring. There's many of the flowering trees and bushes are already starting to bloom out there, and really the tulips can't be far behind. So with everything out there, though, there's really this sense of unease that's just too early, and that with a late frost could undo all the recent growth that in one night. So the concern is, yes, it's an early spring, but we all know that there's a potential that something could happen. So really, that same analogy is why I bring it up, is what our feeling is about Europe. Sure, the economic fundamentals have been improving, and corporate earnings are really poised for the first increase since 2017, but something still seems amiss. it just seems I never get a chance to quote Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure enough. But as Bill said to Ted at the Circle K, there is something afoot at the Circle K. And it couldn't be more true in this situation. There definitely seems to be something afoot. Why are we so worried about it? We're seeing blooms in the economy here in America. Why are we so worried about Europe? Well, first of all, the Greek debt crisis is still with us. I mean, though most agree that it's really been isolated, that a major default is not going to trigger a systemic crisis, but it is definitely still with us. So you have to be considerate of that. And then, of course, we've been talking on this show almost ad nauseum, in my opinion, about Brexit. You know, the UK's plan to leave the European Union, it isn't official yet. And with the two sides sort of touting this probable impact as anything from a net positive for the UK to an absolute economic collapse, it's very difficult to kind of see where to go. It's almost always the case that we sort of suspect that the truth lies somewhere in the middle. But right now, we don't necessarily know what to do as regards to populism. And it's a major force now in European politics. And there are three major elections this year. You have the Netherlands, you have France, and you have Germany. And then the fourth of Italy is a possibility. So really, the unknowns surrounding the outcomes of these events make it difficult for the markets. In our LPL research department, so LPL is our broker-dealer, and that's where much of this research comes from. It's really difficult to make a too bullish of a stance on Europe right now. You know, even though the fundamentals are definitely blooming, and we're going to get into that in a second, it's something to consider as far as just being cautious yet optimistic. With that being said, right now we've got to take a break. Jump on here for a quick second. Get a cup of coffee. We'll be right back with you. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. We talk money and how your money matters here on this show. Talk a lot about fundamentals in the market. And then also we're going to get into 10 questions to ask your financial advisor. Also talk taxes in the second half of the show. Find us on Twitter at Farrell Wealth. Find us on the web. You can stream at wvlp.org. And then obviously listening to us here at 103.1 FM WVLP. We'll be right back in a bit. Thanks. Well, thank you, Steve Miller. Really appreciate it. Appropriate song here for Money Matters with Greg. We're talking money on this show. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth, financial advisor and owner of a wealth management firm here locally in Valparaiso, Indiana. And we talk money on this show, talk financial literacy, also talk the markets, try to help you make sense of what's out there in the markets. We've been doing the show for a little over 2 years now. And talk a lot of different topics. Anything to deal with money is really what we talk about here. So find us on Twitter, at Farrell Wealth. You can find us on Facebook as well. We have a new website going up very, very soon. We're really excited about that. It's going to be moneymatterswithgreg.com. Can't wait to do that and to link with our station here, wvlp.org at 103.1 FM WVLP. And excited to have you with us here as we talk about really about the markets. We're talking Europe right now. Want to get into the fundamentals that are sort of blooming as we talk spring and some of the things that are going on in Europe. And then we're going to get into some questions you want to ask a financial advisor that I'm a big fan of, and then also taxation if we can get in the last half, towards the end of the half an hour here. Find us on iTunes. Certainly download the podcast. You can see us there. And search Money Matters with Greg on iTunes for podcasts. And you can find a number of different topics. We have well over, 60 or 70 episodes up there. So feeling really good about all that as we grow this show and the audience. And thank you for listening. Thanks to all the listeners. Hopefully we're adding some value to you and your lives. Finishing up here, I want to kind of finish up on Europe. Look, back to the conversation about the fundamentals. That's what really all good, prudent investors do, is they invest in fundamentals. And you have to have solid fundamentals in order to be able to hand over your money to a company. And that's really where we cannot repeat it enough. Ultimately, it's corporate earnings that drive stock prices. So as corporate earnings continue to grow, obviously there's growth in the overall stock price. Now, European earnings in the U.S. dollar terms really have been in an absolute decline for the past 3 years. Strong results for corporate Europe for the fourth quarter of 2016 thus far really kind of suggests that the earnings growth drought may be over. So after a strong fourth quarter, European earnings for the whole of 2016 are tracking to an increase of 1.3% over 2015, the first year of growth since 2013. Even more importantly, consensus earnings expectations of 2017 are not only strong at just over 16% growth, but you also have the continued rise as earnings reports come in and economic data is released in the first 2 months of 2017. Overall, 54% of European companies have had positive earnings surprise, and that averages 3.7% in the fourth quarter. This growth is not uniform, but there certainly are ways. There's always a surprise winners and losers by country and sector, and there have been an earnings turnaround in sectors typically considered highly economically cyclical, such as materials and energy. Material companies' earnings have had a strong rebound in 2016, and especially in the fourth quarter. Energy sector earnings declined over the year, but like materials companies, posted earnings growth. So, and the most important probably is the financial sector, and that's key to European equities. Financials at about 20% are the largest component of major European indices. So you really want to keep your eye on the financials, and the financials in Europe have been brutally hit throughout the last 3 or 4 years. You have to remember, we had the Great Recession here in America, and obviously it was brutal for this country, but Europe really had two recessions in the same time frame. And furthermore, the financials are the sector of really the Brexit negotiations, if you start talking about what to do here. So you need to keep in mind that the final decision on what the financial sector looks like post-Brexit is years away from today. And you know, that being said, the ability of the UK banks to operate in an EU post Brexit is a process that they're calling, and it's one of the first times I ever heard it over here, but it's really called a process referred to as passporting. And it's likely to be one of the most contested provisions of the final agreement, and one of the material impacts on banks and bank earnings, without a doubt. So you want to be aware and keep your head above water as far as thinking about passporting and what that means in regards to banks and the bank earnings overall. So thus far, you know, fourth quarter 2016 earnings growth from the financial sector has really been strong at an absolute level and relative to expectations. So it's been really solid. When you're looking at valuations, you can see that European stocks are cheaper than the U.S. Based on calendar year 2017 estimates. The other issue is emerging market equities still appear to most of us as the most attractive, both on an absolute and relative basis. And we've sort of examined a variety of different forward indicators that, you know, basically they all add yield approximately this for the same result. So we've become more comfortable with using calendar year estimates as they account for different regions having different seasonal effects. When you look at Europe and you look at emerging markets, you have to realize some of their springs are our winters, and some of their summers are our winters, and their winters are our summers. So you really have to be able to think about on a technical basis and cyclical basis what might be doing well. But when you look at European technicals, as they continue to improve, they're still trailing the U.S. So if you look at the Europe 600 Index, which represents large, mid, and small-cap companies across 17 countries of the European region, it's really a great gauge for European equity markets overall. And this key index has been in a steady uptrend since early 2009, finding support from this. And basically, it's a trend line, and we do a lot of technicals as well as far as charts and trying to figure out. This is usually of the number of different analysis that we do in investments, this is definitely one of them. It's usually the third as we go look to see where it is on a chart. And notably, on much longer term basis, there's a 400 level on the stocks Europe 600 that has acted as resistance in 2000, 2007, and again in 2015. And it's really important. This important level, and should it give way to a breakout, it really could finally usher in a period of potential European outperformance. So keep your eye on that. If you want to get real technical, the technical term for that, the chart is currently forming what is called an ascending triangle pattern. And I know that sounds funky to a lot of people that might not necessarily follow technical analysis, but that technical formation is a vertical top at the 400 level and the lower ascending trend line below that. Really, should that price break out to the upside, it'll not only mean a major bullish signal for European equities, but the global risk assets as well. This will still has a ways to go before it happens, but the possibility of breakout is increasing, and that's what's positive. So let's look at that as a positive. Now, where's the catch? Let's talk about the catch real quick. European equity markets are looking better in absolute terms, but really the relative basis, they have lagged the U.S. market since the 1980s. There have been periods of European outperformance, but the overall trend clearly has been in favor of the U.S. equities relative to European equities. So think about it like this. The stocks European 600 index is still 8% away from the peak it hit in early 2000. Whereas the S&P is more than 50% above its early 2000 highs. Now, could this mean it's finally time for Europe to outperform the U.S.? There is no easy way to answer that without a doubt. But as one could make that argument many times over the past three decades, you only have to be burned once, burned each time. Every time you think that's going to happen in Europe, it never does. So you want to be able to talk about the relative performance of the stocks European 600 index and see that it's been consistently worse than the S&P 500 going back to the late 1980s. In fact, it's made yet another new low recently. And at the very least, to become more optimistic on Europe, you would really need to see that the relative strength line begin to kind of show improvement. And that's just it's not necessarily there. So one positive to the underperformance is really the overall sentiment backdrop on Europe is still rather low. You know, from a contrarian point of view, this could bode very well for European equities should things begin to improve. For instance, a recent popular survey of global fund managers showed that the euro is one of the most shorted assets globally. And that means they're obviously taking the opposite side and saying that Europe's going to go down and the U.S. is going to go up. And this is also popular in the Barron's Big Money poll, and that was last published in October 2016. Only 14% of money managers expected European equities to outperform the U.S. and emerging market equities. So this is the type of extreme negativity that can be found as major turning points into an overall asset class. This is you were well ahead of the sheep. When the sheep come, is usually when you want to be able to get out of some of these things. This is this extreme negativity can be seen as a major turning point. You really want to consider it and think about what to do. So really to kind of wrap this up as far as Europe goes, we see a lot to like about Europe, coming European spring from both a fundamental and a valuation perspective. The rebound And corporate earnings growth is really important, extremely important. So, however, you know, you start looking at market performance relative to the U.S., and it's still relatively weak. I mean, the major political events that are still ahead of us for Europe are something to seriously consider. To kind of wrap this up as far as spring, I mean, we're getting our spring wardrobe ready right now, right? Everybody's starting to think about spring and starting getting rid of the winter doldrums. But we're not going to put away all of our winter coats yet. It's a good analogy in regards to Europe. You know, it may be time for a few modest investments in Europe for suitable investors and having a diversified portfolio, but we're likely to wait a bit longer before making any significant commitment, which means to put the coats away and to start investing in a brand new spring wardrobe. So sort of the analogy on Europe right now, we are more positive than we've ever been on Europe and emerging markets. Still be cautious and still look at your portfolios and always looking for a diversified portfolio across the board. I want to thank Ryan Dietrich for his contribution on the overall report that I just sort of followed. This is coming from LPL Research's Bert White and Matthew Peterson. You can follow them both on Twitter. And also, I highly recommend that you follow Ryan Dietrich as well on Twitter. If you want a bunch of nerdy stats and you want to go over the nerdy stats in the world in regards to the market and some of the great, I call him baseball stats. He's one of those guys that knows every single, it seems like he knows all the little tidbits. You know, the one guy that's out there that knows the ERA for certain, for the third or fourth starter on a baseball team. That's Ryan Dietrich, and when in regards to the stock market, does a great job, as well does Bert White and Matthew Peterson. Matthew Peterson's chief wealth strategist for LPL. Bert White is a chief investment officer. And so the report is on the website. You can find it at Farrell Wealth on the website and farrellwealth.com. And it's a great conversation about really the tiptoe through the tulips and other fundamental offerings. And it's a PDF, it's free, and you can sort of follow along with that. But that's what we really want to designate a part of the show to is, look, there's opportunity out there, and you might want to be looking overall. Okay, so the show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and president of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm here in Valparaiso, Indiana, which is a fantastic place. If you've never been here, I highly recommend you pass on through on your way through onto Chicago. It is a great place to live and raise a family. Just don't make us raise our taxes over here, because it's part of the reason we're all here. We all left Chicago and came over to a town of about 35,000 with a town square and a skating rink downtown and an amphitheater and some other great things to be able to enjoy as a family. Some fantastic food as well. Big foodie community that's coming along here in Valpo. So really proud of what we do here in Valpo and how we do it. And then also, really, as a wealth management firm, we're in a number of states nationwide. We can service clients all over. It's interesting to hear some of the conversations we're having with clients in Arizona or California or Nevada as to how things are going in those states as well. It's fascinating to me to be able to have those conversations, and certainly trying to bring all that we know in the financial advising world to you as listeners, and talk about value, adding value to you and yours and your family, and helping you save some of those hard-earned dollars that you have. I want to talk about some of the 10 questions you want to ask your financial advisor. It's very, very key that if you are thinking about getting a financial advisor, this comes from CFP.org. It's called letsmakeaplan.org. You can get it there, but it's off the CFP website, which is a certified financial planning website. And that is an accreditation we're going to talk about here today. As far as the 10 questions you want to ask your financial advisor, I highly recommend that if you are going to sit with a financial advisor that you ask these 10 questions to them. They should be easily answered, and there really shouldn't be any reason not to answer them because it's part of the industry. There's been a massive change in the industry and recently with the fiduciary rule that if you've paid attention to some of the politics that are out there, the fiduciary rule is a new rule that is instigated as of April 10th that is talking about transparency in the industry. And we are fans of this rule. to make sure that all things are transparent. I'm all for making sure that clients and investors are aware of all the things that are out there, and there's no hidden agendas in regards to this. They postponed this rule another 60 days, so it'll be interesting to see if it actually shows up the way it's written. But as far as the premise goes, it's really there to protect the consumer, and I highly recommend you ask these questions as you walk through a conversation with a financial advisor. You know, when you're debating about what to do as far as thinking about getting a financial advisor, you have to say to yourself, well, I don't really, I might not necessarily know a lot about investing. I really want to be able to leave it in somebody else's hands. And, of course, with anything, there is a fee involved with that. So talking about that fee and making sure the risk reward is for you versus some of the other low-cost places you might be able to go and still get some sort of exposure to the markets as far as the stock markets, you name it. We've been getting a number of conversations with clients recently talking about how they might want to invest in more equities and more exposure to the equity markets now that the market's run up the way it has. And that's just downright scary. Many of the people that call us to say, hey, look, I'm thinking about adding more equity exposure to my portfolio. What do you think? Those people are the same people that are jumping out of buildings when the market's down 10% like it was last January in 2016. So not just that long ago were we down 12% in the S&P 500, and suddenly we've been really on a tear since the election. We're up over 10% since November. So all of those things considered, when you're looking for a financial advisor, there's really 10 questions you want to ask, and the first one really is just start with experience. And what experience do you have? Really just get a sort of a brief description of the work experience that they have, how it relates to the overall practice. Most professionals need to have a minimum of 2 years professional experience related to financial planning before they can get an accreditation. There are a number of tests that you have to go through in order to be able to talk about different things. Many financial advisors say that they can talk about stocks and bonds, individual stocks and individual bonds. They aren't licensed to do so. You want to be able to make sure that if you do want to have exposure to individual stocks, that your financial advisor has a Series 7. That is a test it's a stringent test you have to study for, and you want to be able to make sure that they have those licenses. Series 7, Series 63, Series 65, all of these things might not make sense to you, but there are things you want to ask. What licenses do you have, and what's your experience? Really are your qualifications. You want to ask about credentials as well. Learn about how to say, how to stay on top of the current changes, developments, and financial planning are all very, very important. If an advisor has a credential versus an advisor that doesn't, there are continuing education requirements that happen throughout the year. Now, most advisory firms have continuing education requirements. They have to be updated on, let's say, for instance, cyber attack risk. They have to have some sort of conversation about the market throughout the year. But there are mandatory continuing education courses that they take. Well, if you have an accreditation, you have to take even more. So it's in your best interest to ask about the accreditations and ask about the licenses that the financial advisor has. So with that, another question is, what financial planning services do you offer? It all ties together with the credentials and the licenses as to what areas of expertise are and factors that are determined the service, financial planners that they can even offer. If they don't have the license, they can't offer the service. So that's where a lot of people say that they have financial planning and financial advising services, and that maybe they do, but they don't. It only stops at really, and to use a baseball analogy, first base. There are a number of different bases to get yourself towards when you start talking about advanced planning and seeing where you might need help. You might have an advisor that's not able to help you in certain places because they're just not licensed in it. So most people don't understand that. When they're looking for a financial advisor, they're looking for someone that is a good relationship, someone they can trust. These are all extremely important, if not the most important things. But when it comes down to brass tacks, what can you offer us as far as an overall advanced planning type conversation? Now, generally, financial planners cannot sell life insurance or securities products, products such as mutual funds or stocks without those proper licenses. You have to be licensed in life and health. Life insurance is one license and health is another. If you're going to talk about health insurance, you really can't give investment. You cannot give investment advice unless registered with a state, or a federal regulatory body. So very, very important that you find out that the advisors are, licensed, and where are they licensed? Are they licensed in a certain state? If you're having a conversation over the phone or a webinar with an advisor, that's out of, you know, let's say Florida or Texas, are they licensed in your state if you're not from there? It's very, very important to find that out. So then another question is, what is your approach towards financial planning? You really want to make sure that the planner's investing philosophy isn't too cautious or overly aggressive for your needs. You want to learn sort of how to carry out those recommendations. How are those going to be carried out if someone's talking about different places to go? And also want to refer to others that might be able to help you make a decision. But what is your investment philosophy and your approach to financial planning is very, very important to get you towards your ultimate goals that you guys agree upon. When you're sitting in a room talking with an advisor, you want to make sure that you that your interests are in their hands and that they're going to do the right thing and they're going to try to do the best that they possibly can do to push your investment philosophies towards achieving your goals. So with that being said, you start thinking about other questions, and we're the fifth one. What types of clients do you typically work with is, I think, really important. I mean, there's a certain net worth before offering services for most advisors. You can specify an investable asset range to kind of find a financial planner whose services best match your needs. You know, if you're walking in the door with $10,000 or $20,000 or even $1,000 to talk to a financial advisor, there might be better places for you. It might be more prudent and cheaper. But if you're looking at a sizable amount of money that needs to make sure that you do things the right way, that everything gets titled correctly, that you want to be able to make sure that things are put in the right account, titled the right way, maybe charitable inclinations in life, charitable inclinations after death. I mean, if you're having very above ground advanced planning conversations, you want to be able to make sure that you fit the practice and the practice is willing to fit you. I mean, if the practice, if the advisor has 5,000 clients, how is that advisor going to even remember your name when you call in, when you call in the office? So it's something to seriously consider. Great question will be, will you be the only financial planner working with me? Some financial planners work with their clients directly and others have a team of people that work with them. And you really want to ask who will handle your account. You know, meet with them, ask whether the planner kind of works with professionals outside their own practice, especially attorneys, insurance agents, and tax specialists. And really, if they say yes, then get a list of those names to check on their backgrounds as well, which is a good, prudent strategy. Look, there's a lot of things in the wealth management world that can be done and be done by a lot of competent people, and that would be the investable strategies and investments. When you start talking about advanced planning, which is another, the next level, and really when you start getting in the big leagues as far as advanced planning, that includes having conversations with tax attorneys, tax advisors, tax specialists, attorneys. That is all the advanced planning world, and what does that team look like? You want to be able to ask questions about that team and also go dig in on their backgrounds and getting referrals as well. But then the next step then is relationship management. How are all those relationships managed in regards to your wealth is very, very important. So if the advisor is going to manage all those relationships and take a lot of things off your plate, well, then you start thinking about any sort of fee that is associated with a fee-based advisory firm and paying a percentage of assets or paying an overall fee for financial planning services. Well, then you start thinking, wow, well, this person basically is my my financial concierge and is my quarterback, I'm willing to be able to pay for that. And if they're willing to manage all those different relationships where I don't necessarily have to be that quarterback, then I might seriously consider that and also want to listen. That's the difference between, you know, basically a robo-advisor that's out there. You can point and click and get into an investment strategy, or a more sophisticated conversation where you really need advanced planning. Leads us into, how do I pay for financial planning services? Look, planners can be paid in several ways, through fees. The commission side of life is definitely going away, but you definitely you can do through commissions. Combination of both can be paid through services, but you want to be able to ask about your fees. Also, how much do you typically charge? You know, although what you pay will really depend on your particular needs, you want to be able to have the advisor provide an estimate of possible costs based on the work to be performed. They can kind of give you a guide and give you a range. You might not necessarily get a perfect number, but costs really should include the planner's hourly rates or flat fees, percentage of commission or percentage on assets, and also commission on any products that you may purchase. Overall, last two questions: do others stand to gain from financial advice you give me? Look, yeah, I want to ask the planner to provide you with a description of conflicts of interest in writing. So, for example, financial planners who sell insurance policies, securities, mutual funds, they may have a business relationship with those companies, and their wirehouse might be affiliated with those investments. They might, their firm might get money on the back end. So you want to be able to make sure that the ethical obligation for all advisors is to put your investment, your interest first when delivering financial planning services and advice and services, and not necessarily getting somebody else paid. And then the last one is really looking at publicly disciplined or unethical actions in your career. You can go on FINRA.org and find through your state insurance and securities departments. They all keep records on disciplinary history. And you want to just ask an advisor, you know, basically, have you been disciplined? Do you have any pending cases against you? What's going on in your background? I'd love to be able to hear about it. And no advisor worth his salt is going to shy away from that. There's going to be reasons. Look, you know, in the markets the way they are, and the way that not everybody's perfect, and there are definitely some blemishes on some advisor, but on advisors' records. But that doesn't mean that they're bad people or they've done things unethically. There just are some people that are out there, and it's a litigious world that you want to be basically, as an advisor, careful. And also making sure that everything's fully transparent. So no problem with asking, and certainly no problem with answering any of those questions as a financial advisor. So those are the 10 questions you want to ask your financial advisor or your potential financial advisor out there. I hope that was a help. The show's Money Matters with Greg, CEO and President Greg Farrell of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm here local in Valpo, and then a number of states where we represent clients all over the nation. Hope I was some sort of help today to add some value today. We talked a lot about the market early on, what's going on last week, and then what's coming up this week. We tiptoed through the tulips in regards to Europe and bringing out spring, and whether we put away all of our winter coats in regards to Europe, and we decided we're all in. We decided we're not. We're still going to watch those all the blooms as far as spring goes, and kind of wait for maybe any frost that comes about. But things are changing over there. We want to be able to talk about that. And then we went over the 10 questions to ask your financial advisor or any advisor that you're thinking about working with. Overall, I hope I was some sort of help. Again, it's on 103.1 FM WVLP. You can find us at WVLP.org, and you can also find us on iTunes, searching Money Matters with Greg in the podcast, and certainly listen to this episode and many others that are listed there. Thanks again to everybody for listening. Again, Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth, and host of Money Matters with Greg on 103.1 FM WVLP. You guys have a great week.
Greg Farrell is the president, CEO of Farrell Wealth, and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. All individuals should get their proper advice investing and managing their personal finances. Money! Get back! Your hands off of my stack.